So, Phil, what's on the show this week?
Well, first up, we're going to do a farm stay.
That's correct. We're going to visit Dawn at the Cutting Horse Farm Stay just out of Tamworth.
Okay, and then after that?
We're going to Tumut to a broom factory.
Where I'm going to catch up with Robert Richards.
Yes, that's correct.
He's going to tell us all about how to make a broom.
Straw broom.
A straw broom, yes. And straight after that, I'm going to be talking with Roger and Helen, and they are full-time travellers.
Yes. Interesting.
A very interesting couple living their life in the caravan and travelling all around
lucky
the country.
Buggers.
Absolutely lucky buggers. And then straight after that, I'm going to try and catch up with a chap named Rod.
Yes, whereabouts is that?
Well, on the banks of the Murray. Now, Rod does a lot of travelling. His caravan's designed for off-grid and he spends an awful lot of time at his favourite getaway, which is on the banks of the Murray River.
Nice.
Absolutely fantastic.
Yes, lucky bugger.
Now, as well as all of this, we're going to have a fabulous selection of music.
That's correct.
As selected by the people we interview. So, what do you think, Lynn?
On with the show.
Okay, it's Lynn here and welcome back to Roman Oz. And I'm with Dawn at the Sunrise Cutting Horses and Hillside Farm Stay. How are you this morning, Dawn?
I'm lovely. A beautiful day.
Oh, it's gorgeous. Gorgeous. Was a chilly night though, I must say. Yeah, had to have the heating on.
Yeah, that's Tamworth.
Yes, it is. So now, can you tell me, what is a cutting horse?
Cutting horses are bred to work cattle.
Yes.
And they're a bit like, genetics is like a border collie. They're attracted to movement.
Right.
And the competition is, they cut a cow out of a herd.
Yeah.
And they've got two people turning back to help them and two people holding the herd. And that shows what the horse can do without the rider's assistance.
Right.
Naturally wants to keep the cow away from the herd. So that's cutting a cow out of a herd.
Okay.
It's called cutting horses.
Right. So who uses your horses? So people come and buy
people
them,
come
do
and buy
they?
My horses. They've got colour in them as well. They're all cutting genetics, but they've got colour in them as well. And people buy them for camp drafting, for rain cow horse, for reining, for cutting, for ranch sorting. The events that have cows in
them. Okay. Yeah. So they obviously appear at rodeos and everything as well.
They could, yes. Some people have used them for, actually we've got some out there that's barrel racing and some that have used them for roping.
Oh, okay. How interesting. Mm. So have you been around horses all your life?
I have.
You have?
Yes. And except for the time I was overseas.
Yes.
I spent 15 years in Canada inseminating cows.
Right.
And working in feedlots. So,
oh, how interesting.
I was still around the cow thing.
Yes.
But I didn't have horses because, I was too busy.
Yeah.
I had dogs. I bred stock dogs.
Right, okay.
So I was trialling dogs in the States in my spare time and stuff. So it was a lot of fun.
So you're a real country woman at heart.
Definitely.
Okay, and you've been
around... Farmer's daughter, for sure.
Oh, right. So you've been around this area, or...
Yes.
Yes? So Tamworth's your home.
Yes, educated in Tamworth.
Yep.
And my father had a farm on the Liverpool Plains.
Right.
So, yeah.
Okay, and you married a farmer.
No, he's not. No, he was in earth-moving construction in Canada. He's Canadian.
Oh, okay.
And my son's Canadian.
Yes.
So he's working in Brisbane at the moment.
So you brought them back here to Australia?
Yes.
For a better life?
1990 we came back. So.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. How wonderful. We'll get back to your facilities here, your Hillside Farm Stay. So how long has that been operating for?
I'm not sure how many years we've done that. At least 10.
Yeah.
We had somebody come and phone us and say, can we park in your front paddock for the night with the caravan? And we said, fine, no problem. And they put us on wiki camps and we've been trying to catch up ever since.
Oh,
putting
really?
In facilities and everything.
Oh, okay. That
so we
was...
had nothing until they came and put us on wiki camps.
Really?
And people started turning up.
So. Oh, well, that's good, isn't it?
Yeah, wonderful.
Yeah, well, that's how I found you on wiki camps.
Yeah,
we were doing some Googling and thought, well, you want something a little bit different for a change.
Yeah.
And, this is nice and
we met some just wonderful people. Just fascinating what they do and how many years they've been on the road. Well, And the education they've had and people from overseas. And just wonderful.
Oh, that's good. So how many people or how many travellers can you accommodate? Or how many have you had here?
We've got, I use 100 acres for the travellers. I mean, I say just pick a tree,
Oh, right, okay.
There's lots of room.
Yes.
So I think Hip Camp has us down as 100 sites, but we don't have any sites as such. But
right.
You know, when we get 30 vans during country music, we can put them in the front paddock under the trees where it's flat. And
so you're popular then for the country music? Oh, yeah. Oh, so you've got the booking sheet going?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Okay. Yeah. And so what facilities do you provide?
We've got a flushing toilet, we've got a long drop toilet, we've got two showers, one indoor and one outdoor, and everybody prefers the outdoor one, showering under the stars.
Yes, I must say I had mine early so it wasn't dark, but I didn't get to see the stars, but it was quite exhilarating being out in the fresh air.
Everybody loves it.
Mind you, listeners, there is corrugated iron around it, so you are not exposed.
That's right. Just has no roof.
No roof.
And the sunshine gives you a tan while you're sailing.
Yeah, exactly. So for those that are interested in doing a farm stay, where are you located, Dawn?
Well, we're about 8 minutes from CBD of Tamworth.
Wonderful. So
just
you're nice
really
and
close. Yes. And although we do have traffic going into Tamworth morning and night, we're fairly quiet at night time.
Yes.
And, yes, there's 6 minutes to go to town, no problem.
Oh, that's good. Nice and handy, especially for the Country Music Festival.
Yes.
I'll remember that.
Yes.
So, Dawn, what song can we play you?
I like country.
Yes?
Anything country is fine.
Anything country?
Yeah.
Well, how about something with a little bit of a horse in it? And we'll do the Man from Snowy River with Slim Dusty. How's that sound?
Oh, that sounds okay.
Okay, so there you go, listeners. The Sunrise Cutting Horse and Hillside Farm Stay for something different. The website's sunrisecuttinghorses.com.
Yeah.
Thank you, Dawn.
Okay, and you find us on Wikicamps and Hipcamp.
Yep, Wikicamps. That's where I found you.
Yep.
There was movement at the station, for the word had passed around that the colt from Old Regret had got away and had joined the Wild Bush Horses. He was worth £1,000, so all the cracks had gathered to the fray. All the tried and noted riders from the stations near and far had mustered at the homestead overnight, for the bushmen love hard riding where the Wild Bush Horses are, and the stock horse snuffs the battle with delight. There was Harrison, who made his pile when Pardon won the cup, and the old man with his hair as white as snow. But few could ride beside him when his blood was fairly up. He would go wherever horse or man could go. And Clancy of the Overflow came down to lend a hand. No better horseman ever held the reins, for never horse could throw him while the saddle girths would stand. And he learned to ride while droving on the plains. And one was there, a stripling, on a small and weedy beast. He was something like a racehorse undersized, with a touch of time or pony, three parts thoroughbred at least, and such as are by mountain horsemen prized. He was hard and tough and wiry, just the sort that won't say die. There was courage in his quick, impatient tread, and he bore the badge of gameness in his bright and fiery eye, and the proud and lofty carriage of his head. But still so slight and weedy, one would doubt his power to stay, and the old man said, "That horse will never do. For a long and tiring gallop, lad, you'd better stop away. Those hills are far too rough for such as you." So he waited sad and wistful, lonely Clancy stood his friend. "Oh, I think we ought to let him come," he said, "and I warrant he'll be with us when he's wanted at the end, for both his horse and he are mountain bred." Oh, he hails from Snowy River, up by Kosciuszko's side, where the hills are twice as steep and twice as rough, where a horse's hooves strike firelight from the flintstones every stride, and the man that holds his own is good enough. And the Snowy River riders on the mountains make their home, where the river runs those giant hills between. I have seen full many horsemen since I first commenced to roam, but no way yet such horsemen have I seen. So he went, they found the horses by the big mimosa clump.
they raced away towards the mountain's brow. And the old man gave his orders, boys, go at them from the jump. No use to try for fancy riding now. And Clancy, you must wheel them, try and wheel them to the right. And ride boldly, lad, and never fear the spills. For never yet was rider that could keep that mob in sight if once they gained the shelter of those hills. So Clancy rode to wheel them. He was racing on the wing where the best and boldest riders take their place. And he raced his stock horse past them, and he made the rangers ring with his stock whip as he met them face to face. Then they halted for a moment while he swung the dreaded lash, but they saw their well-beloved mountain full in view. And they charged beneath the stock whip with a sharp and sudden dash, and off into the mountain scrub they flew. Then fast the horsemen followed where the gorges deep and black resounded to the thunder of their tread. And the stock whips woke the echoes, and they fiercely answered back from cliffs and crags that beetled overhead. And upward, ever upward, the wild horses held their way where Currajong and mountain ash grew wide. And the old man muttered fiercely, we may bid the mob good day. No man could hold them down the other side. When they reached the mountain summit, even Clancy took a pull. It well might make the boldest hold their breath. The wild hop scrub grew thickly, and the hidden ground was full of wombat holes, and any slip was death. But the man from Snowy River let the pony have his head, and he swung his stock whip round and gave a cheer. And he raced him down the mountain like a torrent down its bed, while the others stood and watched in very fear. He sent the flintstones flying, but the pony kept his feet. Oh, he cleared the fallen timber in his stride. And the man from Snowy River never shifted in his seat. It was grand to see that mountain horseman ride. Through the stringy barks and saplings on the rough and broken ground, down the hillside at a racing pace he went. And he never drew the bridle till he landed safe and sound at the bottom of the terrible descent. He was right among the horses as they climbed the farther hill, and the watchers on the mountain standing mute saw him ply the stock whip fiercely. He was right among them still as he raced across the clearing in pursuit. Then they lost him for a moment where two mountain gullies met in the ranges over the final glimpse reveals. On a dim and distant hillside, the wild horses racing yet with the man from Snowy River at their heels. And he ran them single-handed till their sides were white with foam. He followed like a bloodhound on their track till they halted cowed and beaten. Then he turned their heads for home, and alone and unassisted brought them back. But his hardy mountain pony, he could scarcely raise a trot. He was blood from hip to shoulder from the spur. But his pluck was still undaunted and his courage fiery hot, for never yet was mountain horse a cur. And down by Kosciuszko, where the pine-clad ridges raise their torn and rugged battlements on high, where the air is clear as crystal and the white stars fairly blaze at midnight in the cold and frosty sky, and where around the overflow the reed beds sweep and sway to the breezes and the rolling plains are wide. Oh, the man from Snowy River is a household word today, and stockmen tell the story of his ride. 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 And stockmen tell the story.
Welcome back, listeners. You're with Phil C on Roman Oz, and here we are at the Tumut Broom Factory, and I'm chatting with Robert Richards. How are you today, Robert?
Yeah, I'm good, Phil. Good to have you here.
Thanks for having us.
Yep,
fantastic, fantastic. Tell us all about your business, because these brooms, they're all handmade, and they're the old style millet broom. I call them a witch's broom. Tell us a little bit about the brooms.
Well, they're a millet broom.
Yep.
People call them straw brooms or whatever, you know. But I'd worked here 48 years ago, and what we do today is still very similar to what we did 48 years ago, you know,
right,
how they're all made. They're all made by hand. The millet is wound around the handle.
Right.
There's different layers inside the broom.
Yes.
You start off putting a centre layer. There's several different types of brooms we make. We make a wool shed broom, which we put a bit of cane in the centre of it.
Right.
So it makes it a harder, stiffer broom.
Yes, okay.
But an all millet broom, which is your traditional type broom that you can use indoor and out, that's just all millet.
Right.
So you start off putting the centre layer, which we call the guts layers.
Yes.
And you put that on in three different parts, which creates a flat side.
Right.
Then you put an inside hurl. Hurl's just a name given to the millet once it's taken off the stalk, because millet grows like corn. It grows on a tall stalk.
Right.
And once the fibre's been taken off the stalk, they call it hurl.
Right.
So you put the inside hurl on, which is put on in two halves.
Right.
It's put on backwards, then turned over. And then you've got to pound that back tight against the first layer and straighten it all out. And then you'd go to the last layer of hurl.
Okay.
And, it's one of those manual processes and takes a while to learn.
Okay. And who taught you? Did you start out as an apprentice like 48 years ago?
You wouldn't call it an apprentice.
Yep.
You started here when I first left school at 14. We used to live up around the corner here, and I used to come down here before I actually left school and do a few hours in the afternoon, you know, doing cutting strings and that sort of stuff. And then when I left school, I come down here and started off on the floor, cutting strings, putting labels on, doing all those sort of things.
Yep.
And then if you're willing to have a go at learning to make a broom, you'd be put on one of the machines, because back then there was four wooden machines driven off a belt system like the old shearing sheds had on.
Yes.
And you started off making a little hand whisk.
Right.
And you worked your way up, making a bit bigger broom until you got to the proper growth. And then once you got used to making the broom, you went on to piecework. Just like a shearer, you got paid for the quantity of brooms you made.
So how long does it take to make a broom, one broom from start to finish?
Oh, nowadays, 5 or 6 minutes.
Oh, wow, okay.
Well, that's just putting the broom together.
Okay.
That's not stitching it up and all that sort of stuff. Right. And prior to that, too, there's a bit of work involved in the millet.
Right.
Nowadays, we have to use imported millet.
Okay. So where does the millet come from?
It comes from Mexico.
Okay.
We have to import it because years ago, in its heyday around Chermit here, they grew 800 tonne or more a year.
Wow, okay.
Which is approximately around 1,600 acres worth. And millet they grew was a white Italian variety.
Right.
And it'll grow anything from 2 metres to 4 metres tall.
So how do you harvest that? You cut it right off of the ground?
No. It's a very, very labour-intensive crop.
Right,
so when it's ready to harvest, you've got to table it. Which means you've got to walk backwards down the rows. And you grab half dozen stalks at a time.
Yes.
Bend it backwards at hip height.
Yes.
And push it down at the same time, so you're folding the stalk over at hip height.
Right.
And on your right-hand side, you'd do that, then you'd fold that to the left.
Right.
Then you'd grab the row of millet on the left-hand side and do the same, bend it over.
Yes.
And you'd fold that to the right. So you'd be crisscrossing it.
Right.
Walking backwards, so it forms a table where you're crossing the stalks over.
Okay, yes.
Forms a table.
Yep.
So you'd have to go along the table as much as you were going to cut that day. And then you've got to walk along with a little hand knife, no bigger than a pocket knife, and you've got to individually cut each head off.
Oh my goodness. So that's very labour-intensive.
Very labour-intensive crop harvest. And there's a lot more working than that too.
Uh-huh.
And then the broom factories would buy it often, the farmers, by weight, by bale.
Right.
And back when we were buying local millet, we'd have to grade it all.
Okay.
To give you an idea, to grade 100 kilo bale of millet, take you all day.
Right, okay.
And you lose 20% of that in waste.
Right, okay.
So when we order the imported millet, we order it already graded.
Right.
So we do a bit to it, but we don't have to do that full process.
The full process, okay. Yeah. Now, what about the handles? The handles are all Australian?
The handles are, the ones we're using at the moment, are Tasmanian ash or oak, whatever you want to call it.
Right.
Porter Mouldings in Melbourne, Dalamout. They're a nice handle.
Right.
Hardwood handle.
Mm-hmm.
We have looked at a few other different varieties of handles.
Yes.
We'd like to stick to the Australian-made one.
Yep.
But we'll just have to see how the future goes with that.
I understand.
Yep.
I understand. And what about the building we're in? It's very old. It dates back to the 1800s, is that right?
No. It's only... I think it must have been second-hand iron and that they put on after the war.
Right.
Because this was built... This building's only ever been a broom factory.
Right. And when did the broom factory open?
1946, I think it was.
Okay, right.
All the farmers around here, most of them were dairy farmers.
Uh-huh.
To subsidise their dairy, and they grew millet.
Right.
And back in those days, there was up to 14 broom factories in Australia.
Right. The traditional millet broom factories.
Yeah,
up to 14.
14 of them.
Yep.
And they'd send that millet on to Sydney. Right. They grew around here, and it'd be auctioned off in Sydney.
Okay.
And the farmers thought, instead of just growing millet and selling it, let's form a co-op
and make brooms
as well. And that's how this building got built, and they formed the co-op, and it started off like that. And that was a run fairly strong for a lot of years.
Yes.
Like I said, when I've worked here 48 years ago, there were still 10 people working here, and we used to do probably 400 brooms a day.
Right.
And there were still, up to 14 broom factories still going too.
Wow. So now there's only you and your son in here at the moment. Do you have other staff that work with you?
Yeah. Jeffrey Wirtz, he actually owns the building.
Yep.
He's away today, and his son's working here too, which have been teaching him how to make a room.
Right.
Jeffrey does the stitching up of the rooms. Jeffrey owns the building. His father worked here as a broom maker when he was younger. Then he became the manager of the building, of the factory. And when the cooperative failed, he bought it at auction and kept it going with a few people. But he passed away 12 years or more ago now, and so Jeffrey owns the building now, and we're just equal partners in the business.
And obviously your son's going to take over in your footsteps?
My son and his son, hopefully.
Hopefully. And we'll still be making millet brooms.
Millet brooms, that's right.
In another 100 years' time, hopefully. Fantastic. Yep. Well, thanks so much for your time, Richard. It's been a pleasure chatting with you. Very interesting, very informative. And I would recommend to anybody travelling through Tumut to call in and see Richard and have a look. And quite welcome for people to just come in and have a look at how you manufacture the brooms. And
yep, no problems, Phil.
All right, Robert. I said Richard. It's actually Robert Richards, isn't it? I got it back to front.
Yep.
Fantastic. All right, Robert. Well, thank you so much for your time. Now I'm going to play a song for you, but as all my listeners know, it's got to be Aussie. And you're an Aussie, so who's your favourite Aussie band?
Oh, let's go Akadaka and Jailbreak.
Akadaka's Jailbreak. You don't look like the sort of man. He's a broom maker, listeners, but he loves his Akadaka. Stick around for more Roman Oz straight after this.
Was a friend of mine on murder, and the judge's gavel fell. Jury found him guilty, gave him 16 years in hell. He said, I ain't spending my life here, I ain't living alone, ain't breaking no rocks from the chain gang, I'm breaking out and heading home. I'm gonna make
jailbreak,
and I'm looking towards the sky. I'm gonna make a
jailbreak.
Oh, I wish that I could fly.
scream!
Chasing spotlights, sirens, rifles firing, but he made it out with the bullet in his back.
We are at the Bundelong Punt. Is that right? The Bundelong Punt, yes, at Owens River Junction. And I'm with Roger and Helen. Now, Roger, whereabouts is the Bundelong Punt?
Well, it's off the Murray Valley Highway, about 6 km before you get to Bundelong. It's natural where it meets the Murray River.
Uh-huh.
And where we are here, Williams's Bridge, it is a big junction of contributories, I suppose you would say, that meet it and run into the Ovens and then on down into the Murray.
Fantastic, because obviously if I say to my listeners, the Bundelong Punt, they're going to go, where the heck is that? So you've just given us a bit of an idea. We're still in New South Wales, aren't we?
Victoria.
We're in Victoria here.
Yes.
Very close to the border.
Very close.
Okay, just again for the listeners. And you guys are now, I understand that both Roger and Helen, you've both been full-time travelling together for quite a while. Tell us about that. How long have you been doing it?
Oh, pretty close to 11 years.
11 years. And 11 years for you too, Helen?
Yes, 11 years, and I love it.
Yeah. What made you choose to, you know, give up the luxuries of living in a house and live on the road full-time?
Well, I was always an outdoor girl, and I just brought the children all up to love all the wildlife out here that God's given us to live with and love.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just always, why do I have to go home? Can't I just stay out here and enjoy it? So this was my big decision, and I should have done it a long time ago.
Mm-hmm. Now, I understand you were doing a bit of camping and caravanning before you met Roger.
Yes.
And you were just doing it by yourself?
Yes, and a little puppy dog, and mainly met up with friends where I went.
Right.
So that was great to have them there with me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what about Roger? Where did you meet Roger?
Actually, on the riverbank.
On the riverbank?
Yes, he had his own caravan and set up like I did.
Right.
But he was a long way down the riverbank, but every now and then you'd run into different friends along the riverbank, and like you do while we're out here, all over Australia, everybody's just so happy and jolly.
Right.
Yeah, and communication and good fun with people is my life.
Fantastic.
I couldn't do it just sitting in the four little walls at home anymore.
No?
Yeah.
So what about you, Roger? Had you actually sort of retired? Were you full-time on the road when you met Helen, or were you still working? What happened for you? How did it happen?
Yes, I probably just retired, I suppose you would say.
Right.
Yeah, I was probably retired about 4 months quicker than I should have.
Okay, but, fair enough.
The opportunity was there, so I thought, right, oh, well, here it goes. We grab the bull by the horns and away we go. So
okay.
I bought a second-hand van out of Chilton, and the patrol I bought off a fellow that used to be up the road that I used to work on his grapevines.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, so we started off with that.
Right.
We moved around and got to Western Australia and had some funny times over there. It was great. Driving around with no fuel sort of thing upset somebody for a little while.
Okay.
I just wanted to test out how many Ks you could get out of the tank.
So you ran out of fuel at one stage? Really?
Drove it dry.
Okay, and but you had spare fuel on board or no? You did? Yeah. Thank heavens for that. Okay. All right.
Anyway, yeah. Went to one garage and no pumps are broken down. Went to the next garage. We only fill the local people's cars.
Oh, really?
So
wow.
I just hobbled along the road and somebody was fuming.
Yes, okay.
But anyway, when it did conk out, I just got the jerry can out the back and siphoned some in.
Okay, fair enough.
So but I didn't know he had that jerry can full.
So you were really sort of panicking, thinking, well, where were you? In the middle of pretty much nowhere, or...?
Yeah, I suppose you'd probably say that. They were only little tiny towns, like, well, that's what I say. They only supplied
and
fuel
the local
to the locals.
The locals.
And the one where we thought we might have got it was on a bit of a beaten track. And
yep.
Oh, no, she's all out of order, mate. She broke down.
Well, I noticed now you've got this great truck. You've got an Iveco truck. I don't imagine you'd run out of fuel with that beast of a thing, would you? How many litres does that carry on board?
90 underneath in
yes.
the tank, and we've got another 40 in two jerry cans.
Okay. So you've got plenty of fuel?
Oh, that'll take you 800 or something, yeah.
700-800 kilometres. Why did you choose a truck? I mean, most people drive around when they're full-time on the road. They've got 200 series Land Cruisers or big Nissan Patrols or whatever. You don't see that many trucks. A lot of people are getting into these big utes like Rams and GMCs and everything. But a truck, I mean, the way you got it set up, it's fantastic. So was that the reason you wanted something so you didn't have to worry about weights and measures like you do with a lot of cars and things? Or... what was your inspiration for a truck?
Well, I thought the way they were starting to measure up or weigh up vehicles.
Yeah.
I got a big double swag and I thought, well, this thing here, we get it built up and we can just leave the van somewhere in a yard.
Yep.
And we can go bush or we can go to the seaside and we can
yep.
get to places to have a look where other people won't go, because if with your...
Toyotas and your stuff, Land Cruisers.
You just haven't got a lot of room. By the time you've got your stuff in there, you've yep. got nowhere to put your bed. So,
yes, yes.
And that's why we benched that out there. You can just slide in there sideways and roll the swag out.
It's an impressive rig. And you got a boat loader on top of there as well. You obviously
yeah,
love your fishing.
Boat loader, car fridge, hot gas water at the back there to have a shower.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, winch to pick the motor up and put that up onto the side of the truck. Remote to put the boat back down to the ground and back up. Not too much lifting to do.
No, well, that's the idea, because, I mean, as you're getting older, you don't want to be straining lifting up boats and mucking about with motors. So this setup of yours is pretty much all automatic. You just press a button and things start
yeah.
to lift up and lift down. And
yeah.
So you can enjoy all the luxuries of fishing and being on the great outdoors, but with a little... little to no sweat involved.
That's about right.
Yep.
I unloaded over there at that little gap
yep.
where we're sitting.
Mm-hmm.
And all the boys were down here, and I just let her down, pushed her into the water, put the motor on, give her a kick with my foot. And they said, well, look at that. The whole bugger's got his foot in already.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
It really is impressive. And I guess the main thing, too, is you're out here off-grid, so you're using your solar panels mostly for your power.
Yep.
And you mentioned before you did have a generator just in case you had a few bad days of bad weather.
Yep.
Or if it gets so stinking hot, you can run that for the air conditioner.
That's correct, yep.
Which is not that often, you said. You usually just
follow a shadow around
and stay in the cool. Great
there's
idea.
There's always a breeze blowing under the van. If you follow it round, you'll find out there's always a breeze blowing under the van.
Yep, yep. All righty. Now, I'm just noticing here, too, for you, Helen, you've got a spinning wheel here.
Yes, I have.
And what do you do with it?
Well, at this stage, this year I've just been learning to spin with the COVID lockdown because we haven't been able to travel too far.
Right.
I'm really enjoying it, and when Roger's out fishing, hopefully catching a fish,
yes,
I'm here spinning away.
Okay.
And filling in a few hours a day, and I'm really enjoying it.
Okay. That's excellent.
Yeah, otherwise I love my camp cooking.
Uh-huh.
I love cooking on the fire with camp ovens. And
yes.
Make cakes, pudding, roast, whatever you ask for, I'll dish it up for you.
In a camp oven?
Yeah.
Under wood and a fire?
Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
I've got the little tripod and billies and everything that go with it.
Yeah. Yeah. So you can pretty much live, well, you have been doing it for 10 years.
Yes.
Completely off the grid.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Would you ever go back to normality, as I'd like to call it, you know, living in a house, paying an electricity bill, or you think that this is it for you for the rest of your lives now?
I think this is it for me.
Yep.
Don't know about Rod, but he seems to be settled in. But
it all depends on your health.
Yeah.
Our health is the big number one.
Of course.
Of controlling that one, I think.
Yeah.
And I think while I'm out fishing, I'm enjoying myself better than sitting in some home.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
And some poor person around about that's not doing too well. But
yes.
Yeah.
But as far as it goes, you both look very healthy.
Oh, yes.
I won't ask your ages. But you're obviously enjoying what you're doing, and you're going to keep doing it for as long as you possibly can.
This is it. You pull up somewhere and there's always a bush walk or something. But if you're at home, you just turn the idiot box on and that would be it.
Mm, mm.
And you don't use your muscles as much at home as you do out here.
Okay.
And we both notice each other as stronger and more healthy
for doing it, absolutely. Yeah. And in the 10 years you've both been on the road, you've travelled around Australia a few times, I imagine?
Yep.
Yeah?
Inland.
So inland and followed the coast up and down, or you may
have... Yeah, we've been... There's probably only a little bit we haven't done. That's out to Borroloola and up to... what's the place up the top? Gove, is it?
Yeah, Gove.
Okay.
Yeah, we've...
Nullumboy,
Yeah,
we've been to Bourke and into the Gulf, back around.
You're never lonely. There's always happy hour at 5 o'clock every day.
Yeah, 5 o'clock every day, there's always happy hour. And that is so true. I guess one of the things I've noticed about being on the road myself, and I'm not full-time on the road, is that the people you meet along the travels are always ready to sit down, have a drink with you, and share a story, and just make the day that much more pleasant and much more enjoyable.
Yes.
Fantastic.
And we all learn from each other too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Went to the tip and put my foot in the water up at the tip.
Okay. Yes, you did. Yes.
There's the island, went across to there. We've had a good time.
Fantastic.
All over the west.
Yes.
Yep.
Is there anywhere, I know everybody's got their idea of what's a favourite spot or what's the best spot, but for you, Roger, is there one that you really just love to return back to each time?
Oh, there's probably one or two as far as a bit of fishing, but as I say, people say what you've just spoken about, and really it doesn't matter. You get out of life what you see, and every town is different.
Yep.
People are different. You talk about different stuff, and I don't think there's any special spot that you'd really say you could go and...
Yep.
Camp at, but really, if I was going to uproot and leave from here, I'd definitely think I'd go out to Queensland somewhere I could do a bit more dam fishing and the big dams up there. Barramundi fishing.
Yep. And what about you, Helen? Is there one that really warms your heart? You think, geez, I wish I could get Roger to do that one again, or?
I got a little soft spot for Port Douglas.
Okay.
Yeah, I like the little town up there. It's got everything that you ever need up there.
That's it.
Pretty well every little town has got its own little gold mine of its own.
Yes.
And lovely markets around and
something for everybody.
There is,
all right.
Yeah. And the vegetables and the fruits in Queensland are just unbelievable. And down in Victoria, it's lovely green grass and snowfields, everything. We've got it all.
Got it all. Australia
We've been very blessed.
We are. Australia really is the greatest country in the world. Yeah. And I don't just say that. I mean, if it's such a bad place, why is it all the backpackers are coming here? It's it's the most incredible country, and people really should get out and enjoy it.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just going to have to wind this up now, Roger and Helen. I've got to play you a song, as all my listeners know, and it's got to be Australian. So you've got a favourite Australian singer there, Roger?
Oh, I suppose we'll have John Williamson.
Yep.
And All Among the Gum Trees.
Home Among the Gum Trees. What do you think, Helen?
I reckon that hits the nail on the head there.
All righty. Well, stick around, listeners, for more of Roaming Oz straight after Johnny Williamson's Home Among the Gum Trees.
I've been around the world a couple of times or maybe more. I've seen the sights, I've had delights on every foreign shore. But when my mates all ask me the place that I adore, I tell them right away. What do we tell them? Give me a home among the gum trees, with lots of plum trees, a sheep or two, a big kangaroo, a clothesline out the back, veranda out the front, and an old rocking chair. You can see me in the kitchen cooking up a roast, or Vegemite on toast, just you and me, a cup of tea. Later on we'll settle down and mull up on the porch and watch the possums play. Give me a home among the gum trees, with lots of plum trees, a sheep, a duck, a kangaroo, a clothesline out the back, veranda out the front, and an old rocking chair. There's a Safeway's up the corner and a Woolies down the street, and a brand new place they've opened up where they regulate the heat. But I trade them all tomorrow for a single bush retreat with a kookaburra's call. Give me a hand among the gum trees, with lots of plum trees, to a kangaroo, a clothesline out the back, veranda out the front, and an old rocking chair. Some people like their houses with fences all around, others live in mansions and some beneath the ground. But me, I like the bush, you know, with rabbits running round, and a pumpkin vine out the back. Is your turn. Give me a home among the gum trees, with lots of plum trees. Give me a home among the gum trees, with lots of plum trees, a sheep, a duck, a kangaroo, a clothesline out the back, veranda out the front, and an
Oh, welcome back, listeners. My name is Phil C, and this is Roaming Oz, and we are on the banks of the mighty Murray River near Yarrawonga, and I'm chatting to a chap named Rod. How are you today, Rod?
I'm very good, thank you. Yes, very relaxed and sitting back here enjoying the Murray.
Fantastic stuff. Now, the Murray River, it's a mighty river, and it runs for about 2,000 kilometres or more, is that right?
Apparently about that length, yeah. About twice as far by river as by road.
Fantastic stuff. Now, you've obviously travelled a lot of the road, not so much the river. How long have you been travelling?
Been caravanning for about the last 4 years.
Right.
But before that, four-wheel driving for many, many years.
Right.
And swagging it and camper trailers, so yeah, so bit more luxury now.
Yep. Bit more luxury as you get a little bit more mature and a bit more refined in your age.
Yes, and
so
the bones
speak.
Start squeaking a little bit.
Okay. Now, I must point out, I've just met Rod, and I noticed, first of all, you were doing a lot of your own cutting up of timber for your fire. Tell us, you got a chainsaw, you got a log splitter.
You're looking pretty fit for your age. I'm not going to say how old you are. How long have you been doing this sort of stuff where you're cutting down your own wood? And
been doing this for many, many years, but now we travel with a chainsaw.
Yep.
Only use the wood we want to burn at the campsite and never take it out with us.
Uh-huh.
Little fire pit made out of a cut-off gas bottle, which we use for boiling the water out of the river for dishes and washing and clothes and all that sort of stuff, yeah.
Now, I noticed that the other day when we arrived, you're actually having a sort of a bath by the river there. You'd boiled up the water in your gas, in your tell us about this. It's a gas bottle which you've cut in half, using that, and above that you've got your boiler which hangs from a rod. You made that up all yourself?
Yeah, rod, yep. Just hangs a 15-litre stainless steel boiler which just hangs off the top, and we've always got hot water for when we need it.
Okay.
If there's no one around, we will use it for showering outside.
Oh. Okay, right. Now, I understand you're saying showering. You've got some sort of a bilge pump set up, is that correct?
Yes, we just use a boat bilge pump and drop it in a bucket of water and get the temperature where we want it.
Right.
And just use a portable shower head and away we go. We lather it up.
So what about your wife? Now, I notice she's sitting over there blushing a bit. Is she apt to sort of have a shower outside as well or not?
What do you mean, what about the wife?
she's over there blushing. Does she like to take a shower outside or is it?
Only once very quickly and a car turned up. So she diverted real quick. She went back to the knitting needles.
Okay. Back to the knitting needles. Okay, so you've got an incredible setup here. You've got a Flinders caravan. It's about a 20-footer. It's got all the luxuries you could imagine inside. What attracts you to the free camping lifestyle?
It's like we don't like being crowded in around people. We like to be able to do our own thing, come and go. We've been lucky. We just leave our stuff out for a while if we're going into town. It's always pretty secure.
Right.
Never had a problem with people, coming around that shouldn't have done or it's all good like that.
Fair enough. Yep. So how long have you had this particular caravan?
4 years.
4 years. And out of 4 years?
Yes.
How much free camping as opposed to, say, caravan parks where you're on electricity and shower and toilet and so on and so forth on hand, would you have done?
1%.
1% in the caravan parks?
Yep. Hardly ever do a caravan park.
Right.
2.5 years we went without doing a caravan park.
2.5 years.
Yes.
So the caravan's obviously set up with solar panels. You've got batteries to run. Yep. Now, you've got a 100 series cruiser with a fridge in there. You've got batteries to run, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, all runs that, yep.
So what's the longest amount of time you would have spent sort of off-grid on one of your trips?
We spent 3 months in Tasmania.
Right.
Never plugged into a PowerPoint once.
Right.
Done a little bit of low-cost camping over there, which is like $10 donations, and it goes to the schools and all that sort of stuff. So it's just good to help people out, and it's just great like that. But, yeah, we could go forever without going to a caravan park.
Okay, you just obviously you've got large water tanks on there, and if you do run out, you carrying spare water out of the back of the cruiser?
Yeah, we always carry 40 litres of water in the back, and we just can use that and just transfer that into the tanks of the caravan needed and just fill it up when we're in town.
Okay, and as far as your grey water's concerned, you obviously go to the recognised dump points.
Yes,
and
we do. We've got a big container to catch all that, which then goes in the back of the car, and we just it's dumped at the proper appropriate places.
Fair enough. Yep. Now, I noticed this morning you were actually making bacon and eggs. Now, you weren't sort of cooking that on your open fire. You've got one of these new stoves with a glass lid and you've modified that so you can actually cook roast in it.
Yes, we done a roast in it the other night. We had roast pork. It was very good, yes.
Okay. So
we had a modified mix. The lid wasn't quite high enough. Little bit of aluminium stripping and little bit of few pop rivets and we're all good, yep.
Okay, and it takes about 3/4 of one of those propane bottles.
Yeah, we used, because we done the veggies and everything in it, and it was nearly a whole can, not quite.
Not quite, but a whole can. They're about $3 or something, aren't they? $2, $3.
Yeah. Yeah.
So $2 or $3 to cook a family roast is pretty economical, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it was good, yeah.
Now, what about your big gas bottles? When you're on the road and you're not stopping in caravan parks, what would you average out of one of your large 9-kilo bottles?
Around about 14 days.
Okay.
The fridge always runs on gas. We use a bit when we turn the hot water service on.
Yes.
And the rest of us just bit of the stove in the caravan, which is not very often,
mm-hmm.
and that's it, yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So do you see yourself continuing to do this for quite a while yet, for a few more years to come?
Absolutely. Yep. It's just a great life. It's called retirement.
It is called retirement, yep. Isn't it? And you're living the dream.
Yeah, living the dream.
And you're actually doing it better than most because you're living the dream and it's costing you very little money.
Yeah, the biggest cost is fuel.
Biggest cost is fuel.
We don't move a lot. Sometimes we'll stop at a place for a week, 10 days if we like it.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we might only move 20 kilometres down the road.
Okay.
Just find the next spot, yeah.
I understand. And these particular spots on the Murray, where we are now, you don't actually want to divulge where it is because it's such a beautiful spot and we just kind of tripped over it by accident. We are here on a long weekend. And in the background there, you can hear a boat roaring down the river. There's a few people here, but normally you say you come here and you're pretty much the only one here.
Yeah, well, we had 10 days here a while back and we were the only one.
Fantastic.
It was great. The only people we spoke to for 10 days, we'd go into Yarrawonga and we'd go, 2 cappuccinos, please, skinny milk, half strength in a mug. Yeah. And that was our conversation with anybody for 10 days.
So what about your wife? How does she cope with the isolation, do you think?
What about my wife?
How do you think she copes? He's got a sense of humour, listeners. How do you think she copes with the isolation? Is she happy to be out in the middle of nowhere?
She absolutely loves it.
Yeah.
Yeah, the deal is she cooks and I wash the dishes.
Yes.
Yeah, but sometimes I do both.
Sometimes you do both.
And I've been known to get out and wash the clothes and
Sweep
the floor. And
all right.
Yeah.
And wheel a chainsaw.
Yeah, and wheel a chainsaw.
And a block splitter.
Yeah.
He's the ideal man, ladies, okay? He does the dishes, he does the cooking occasionally, and he can wheel a chainsaw and a block splitter. Rod, it's been fantastic talking with you here today on the Murray. I want to thank you so much for your time. You probably wouldn't know, but I always play a song at the end of every interview, and they're only Aussie because this is Aussie. This is Roman Oz. Got a favourite Australian singer or song you'd like us to play for you?
Yeah, I reckon probably The Boys from the Bush Are Back in Town.
The Boys from the Bush Are Back in Town. And that, of course, is Lee Kernaghan.
That's right.
All right. Thank you so much for your time, Rod. Stick around, listeners. Straight after this track, we're going to be back with more Roman Oz.
Shearing sheep, we've been mustering stock. We've been culling out roots, we've been spraying the crops. We've been droving cattle up an old stock route. Now it's Saturday night, we pile in the ute. We're the boys from the bush and we're back in town. Well, the dog's in the bag and the foot goes down. We're live members of the Outback Club. We're the boys from the bush come in from the scrub. We've been out in the heat. We've been loading the trucks. Been fixing fences. We've been choking on dust. We curse the rain. We curse the drought. Now Saturday night. Shout. We're the boys from the bush and we're back in town. We get high when the sun goes down. We're live members of the Outback Club. We're the boys from the bush coming from the scrub. And we're back in town. Well, we raise hell when the sun goes down. We're live members of the Outback Club. We're the boys from the bush come in from the scrub. Yeah, we're the boys from the bush and we're back in town. We get high when the sun goes down. Scrub. We're the boys from the bush coming from the
That was a great song that Rod requested, Boys from the Bush and Lee Kernaghan, talking about the bush.
A city girl is happy with her friends and family life. Appreciates a wine with him at night. She tries to find the sparkle, she searches but it's gone. With lots of love she hopes he'll be alright. Her man has gone all quiet, he's not at ease. He doesn't feel at home, he's hard to please. He gets itchy feet, is tired of noises in the street. He needs to walk for hours through the trees. Now a bushman can't survive on city lights, opera, rock and roll and height of heights. His moon shines on the silver brigalo, shimmers down the inland river flow, out there where the yellow belly bites. He's working with his hands today on a building site. He can smell the cypress on the floor. It takes him to a sandy ridge out amongst the pines. No shearing, no ploughing anymore. His kelpie dog is tired and fast asleep, sick of searching gardens for the sheep. His master doesn't whistle tunes, he's not in the mood. His love of open spaces runs too deep. Now a bushman can't survive on city lights, opera, rock and roll and height of heights. His moon shines on the silver brigalo, shimmers down the inland river flow, out there where the yellow belly bites. He tries to please his woman, the lady of his life. He's standing at a party with a plate. She finds him on the balcony, staring at the moon. That old familiar face he can relate. His moon shines on the silver brigalo, shimmers down the inland river flow, out there where the yellow belly bites.
Hope you enjoyed the show, listeners.
If you missed any, check out our Facebook page, Spotify, or romanoz.com.au.
Tune in next week for more
Roman Oz.